From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
We represent 8%, 8 to 10% of the population in the greater Austin region, which is a very small demographic, but we're now one of the largest Black chambers in the state of Texas. And so our niche is to connect with the African American and the African diasporatic community in a way that corporations are interested in, small businesses are interested in, but may not necessarily have the time or the resources to connect at that level. And so the chamber becomes a strategic partner and an ally for those organizations. And for a small business that happens to be run by an African American, you know, we bring the corporate partners, the government agencies, and the other small businesses to the table. You know, it's my job to make sure that we have a plethora of relationships. And I feel like as a chamber, if we can't help you step up your game through relationships and networks, then we aren't doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Natalie Madeira Cofield, President and CEO of the Greater Austin Black Chamber of Commerce, located in Austin, Texas. Cofield is also the founding president of the Austin Black Technology Council and founder of Walker's Legacy, a national women's and business collective. As president and CEO of the chamber, Cofield travels domestically and internationally, promoting Austin for business recruitment and establishing relationships with corporate partners throughout the region. She comes to this role after gaining years of expertise in long-term planning, program development and management, public affairs and marketing for businesses, nonprofit, microfinance enterprise, and economic development entities. Her experiences have included management roles in major global markets, including Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, New York, and London. In 2009, Cofield published The Pursuit of Entrepreneurship, a guide for African-American entrepreneurs, commissioned by the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, and was a contributing author for the 2011 National Urban League State of Black America Report. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Natalie Madeira Cofield, President and CEO of the Greater Austin Black Chamber of Commerce, In Black America.
I always sell what it is. It's the domestic emerging market. My response is, why wouldn't you be focused on this community? Not because there's some, you know, burden reason. It's because this is a growth market opportunity for your business. And to not focus on it, and to not focus on the African-American community, one of the fastest growing entrepreneurial segments in the country, just seems to be a poor business decision. And so that's the way I position it. And then we also always make sure that we bring great examples of successful businesses that we've supported, we've helped, and we've worked with that they can also connect with. But for some of the corporations, this isn't just about the small business and the business connection. It's also about the retention of employees. And so, you know, when you have a situation like we have in Austin, where you have an exodus of African Americans, corporations that spend thousands of dollars on each employee to relocate them here, that's, again, a bad business decision not to invest in an organization that actually has the potential to help you retain your employees.
Founded in 1982 by 11 community, political, and business leaders in Austin, Texas, the Greater Austin Black Chamber of Commerce, then the Capital City African American Chamber of Commerce, was established to bring awareness to the enormous amount of money generated from African American consumers in the form of travel and tourism within the goal of providing economic prosperity for African American businesses and the general Greater Austin region. The Greater Austin Black Chamber of Commerce promotes the development of African American businesses and the expansion of the Greater Austin business community by providing resources, technical assistance, and leadership on policy issues that enhance economic growth and by promoting convention and tourism. Born and raised in Rochester, New York, Natalie Madeira Cofield is a graduate of Howard University School of Business, where she earned a degree in Management Information Systems. Cofield has carved a niche for herself as an entrepreneur, advocate, and speaker of all things startup and diversity. Her work has been featured in Forbes, Business Insider, Black Enterprise, Essence, and Ebony magazine.
You know, Rochester was a really interesting city. It still is. It was positioned to be a very sophisticated manufacturing market. I mean, when you look at it, we had Kodak, we had Xerox, we had Bosch and Lomb. Mm-hmm. And these were all the companies that actually gave birth to the innovations that created Silicon Valley. But unfortunately, due to some corporate decisions and the lack of capitalization on the innovation that was coming out of these businesses, they've all kind of fallen by the wayside. And so what you see today is a company like Instagram being sold for billions of dollars, where Kodak is now liquidating billions of dollars worth of assets. It's just really interesting to see that shift and how it impacted the economy of Rochester.
What were some of your favorite subjects while you were in high school?
Well, you know, it's funny. My favorite subject in high school was history. I absolutely love history. I remember we were taking American history and we watched the movie Rosewood. And my teacher asked me to give a speech. And it was also the same time that I was taking economics and we were talking about different government policies. And that really actually changed my life. It really did.
And why Howard?
Why not Howard?
I knew that was going to be the comeback.
As the best HBCU in the land. That is the Mecca. You know, Howard really just stuck with me. It was in the heart of D.C. I felt like I could be engaged and involved in whatever movement or activity my heart desired. And I mean, just to be able to have the kind of rich history and legacy, I couldn't have picked a better school.
Is why not Howard part of the orientation? Because everyone that I speak to who have attended Howard, when I say why Howard, and their rhetoric is, why not Howard?
Really?
Really. So I'm thinking that's part of the orientation when you all attend Howard.
We were all programmed to say the same thing. Well, the orientation, I mean, listen, I grew up in a community where my sisters and I were the only African Americans in our school up until the 10th grade. And to go to a historically black college or university and to see that many African Americans and people from throughout the diaspora together under the foundation of education. I mean, the first time we had a big football game, I cried because I had never been around that many black people before in my life. And so Howard really set the tone and tenor for me and for the foundations of why I do what I do. And it just helped me to further my interest in history through whatever discipline I took at the school, because I actually majored in information systems.
And how does a information system major become president and CEO of a chambers of commerce?
With some good luck and some hard work. So, you know, my father always told me, Natalie, you should major in management, but management of what? He said, you need to major in management of technology. And I did it. And
when was this?
This was, I was now I don't really tell people when I graduated now, okay. But now you got me now, so I'm going to tell you. This was 1998, and this was around the time of the first big tech boom. And my dad was a professor at RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology. And I decided to major in COBIS, which is Computer Operation-Based Information Systems. I spent all my evenings in school engineering, and a lot of people don't realize that I used to code. Okay. And so way before all of this kind of tech stuff for women who code was where it is today, I was doing that stuff because that was my major. But it didn't touch, move, and inspire me because I like to engage with people using technology, but I want to talk to people and engage with the community. And so I did a number of different roles at JPMorgan Chase. And then I lived in LA, and then I lived back in New York, and then I lived in DC. And, you know, the rest is history from there. I ended up in Austin, Texas.
And what attracted you to Austin other than the job itself, of course?
Well, you know, to be quite candid with you, when the opportunity presented itself to me at first blush, I said, well, where is it? And they said, in Austin. And I said, oh, no, I'm not moving to Texas. You know, New Yorkers don't do Texas. And they said, well, don't say anything. Just pray about it. And it kept coming up to me. And the more research I did on Austin, the more I realized, wow, there's something really special happening in this city right now. And I just felt like I would have the opportunity to really build something very unique for a community that really needed it. And so, you know, my heart led me, obviously through a very rigorous interview process, they selected me and I moved to Austin. So, you know, how the city brands itself definitely plays a role in how people feel about it even before they come.
When one looks at a chamber of commerce, there's the majority chamber of commerce. So what niche does African American chambers of commerce try to carve out in communities in which they serve?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I'll start speaking specifically to our chamber. You know, we represent 8% 8 to 10% of the population in the greater Austin region, which is a very small demographic, but we're now one of the largest Black chambers in the state of Texas. And so our niche is to connect with the African American and the African diasporatic community in a way that corporations are interested in, small businesses are interested in, but may not necessarily have the time or the resources to connect at that level. And so the chamber becomes a strategic partner and an ally for those organizations. And for a small business that happens to be run by an African American, you know, we bring the corporate partners, the government agencies, and the other small businesses to the table. You know, it's my job to make sure that we have a plethora of relationships. And I feel like as a chamber, if we can't help you step up your game through relationships and networks, then we aren't doing what we're supposed to be doing. And we're also responsible for making sure that people know that there is a presence of African Americans in this city. And I think when you look across the broader landscape of the country, that's the role that African American chambers play, is to be able to be close enough to understand the very distinct needs of the African American and the African diasporatic community and communicate those to the broader community.
When you go into these corporations, and I'm going to name drop, this is Dell, Samsung, and other tech companies here in Central Texas, what are you bringing them as far as what are you trying to articulate for them to do business with minority-owned companies?
Well, you know, the first thing is I never position it from a position of burden. I always sell what it is. It's the domestic emerging market.
Okay.
My response is, why wouldn't you be focused on this community? Not because there's some, you know, burden reason. It's because this is a growth market opportunity for your business. And to not focus on it, and to not focus on the African-American community, one of the fastest growing entrepreneurial segments in the country, just seems to be a poor business decision.
Okay.
And so that's the way I position it. And then we also always make sure that we bring great examples of successful businesses that we've supported, we've helped, and we've worked with that they can also connect with. But for some of the corporations, this isn't just about the small business and the business connection. It's also about the retention of employees. And so, you know, when you have a situation like we have in Austin, where you have an exodus of African Americans, corporations that spend thousands of dollars on each employee to relocate them here, that's, again, a bad business decision not to invest in an organization that actually has the potential to help you retain your employees. So I always talk to businesses like about business, because that's it's about the bottom line. And then from there, it all shakes itself out, because at the end of the day, people care about color, but they don't care about color if that color can't lead to green.
I understand.
And so we need to make sure that the way we're branding the community again that we serve is one that makes sense to their bottom line. And I always start by asking them, what are your strategic directives? So that I can then figure out what we can do to customize something to support that and to support our community.
If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Hanson Jr. and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And we're speaking with Natalie Medea Cofield, President and CEO of the Greater Austin Black Chamber of Commerce. Ms. Cofield, Austin is situated where it has incubators.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it important for African Americans to become a part of this tech world innovation?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we're actually working on draft plans right now to build an accelerator with the chamber. So technology is, just like most consumer products, disproportionately used at higher rates by people of color.
Okay.
But technology platforms, technology companies, technology products are, again, disproportionately not created by people of color. And so it's important as we look at the direction that the economy around the world is going, that we understand what it takes to build successful startup businesses. And when you look at the skill sets, it's having a core in science, technology, engineering, and math, but also connection to capital. And not just capital from the form of conventional loans from banks, but capital in the form of access to individuals who have resources to invest in your small business. So for us not to be at the table of technology and green and biotech is for us to not be at the table for tomorrow's economic future for this country. And so when I first came to Austin, we formed the Black Technology Council because it was critical. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're not even in the game. You know, and so we are now in the game in green, we're in the game in biotech, and we're in the game in tech. And the Black Technology Council now has a national brand for itself. We won the Diversity Partner of the Year from Google, a national award as a local chamber of commerce, because we get it. And what we're trying to do is make sure that this is something that resonates within our community, and not just with the younger generation, but with all businesses. Because if you don't have a web presence, if you can't accept payments that are not just cash, listen, you know, then you're doing yourself a major disservice. And we want to create new tech companies. And so that's what we've been focused on. That's why it's important.
Do you have an opportunity to go out and speak to these young people and not so young, I'm talking about college students, having them understand the necessity to one extent, but the opportunity on the other hand that this new technology affords them?
Yeah. And in fact, so much so that we created the first collegiate chapter program for a chamber in the city of Austin. Okay. So now we actually have two official chamber affiliates on the campus of University of Texas at Austin and at Houston-Tillotson University. And these are young students. We raised $30,000 in scholarships for them. And they're evangelizing the brand of the chamber and doing so through business. They get it. They're using technology.
Okay.
What we're trying to do is connect them to the resources to take the idea and turn it into a business. You know, it's not just about, it's a consumption. And I think that that's where we have had the biggest issue in our community. We're one of the largest consumers, but we're not the biggest creator. And we've got to at least start to begin to create as much as we consume. And we need to teach the younger generation that it's important for them to have cross-cultural relationships, because these technology firms are going to require that.
What are some of the tools or studies that are necessary for one to have the mindset to create these products? Some of the classes that one should consider taking?
Well, the first class, I believe, is Hustle 101. And let me just repeat that. The first class should be Hustle 101. So I always tell young people, listen, you know, you have to have charisma, you have to have drive, and you have to have the hustle. So you could take a class all day, every day, but if you don't have those components, this might not work out for you from an entrepreneurial perspective. And entrepreneurship is not for everybody, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. We need people everywhere. But for tech companies, obviously focusing in the STEM space, the science, technology, engineering, and math, obviously focusing in business, obviously focusing on communications is very, very important. What we don't want to see is someone who's overly heavy in tech and not competent in the business component, or someone who's overly competent in the business component and not competent in the communication and the marketing component. To be an entrepreneur, you have to have a plethora of different skill sets, and you have to be well-rounded. It's your job to know about everybody else's job so that you can help them do their job better. You don't have to be skilled at every single one of them, but you need to know about every single one of them. So I would encourage young people to do as much generalized specialization as they can right now, because this is the time, and they need to do internships. Let me tell you, if you don't do an internship in college, I really believe that you're putting yourself in a very precarious position when it comes time for you to find a full-time job. Employers want to see that you have had previous work experience.
Obviously, you have forged a niche for the Greater Austin Black Chamber of Commerce here in Austin. But what do you see some of the other challenges of Black Chambers of Commerce around the country?
I think, you know, to be quite candid with you, I think there needs to be a shift in focus and in brand and in connection and in the form of communication. The models that paved the way for the creation of, you know, this is, you know, Booker T. Washington's Negro Business League is what got this whole thing started. 1900s, you know, the civil rights era helped to create the necessity and lay the groundwork for Black chambers, but we're in a new time. We are, but we're not. And it's important that we understand how to connect with all the generations and understand the industries that are driving our respective economies and understand how to build cross-cultural relationships. I cannot stress that more. As a Black Chamber of Commerce, it's not my job just to have Black relationships. I have to have relationships with everybody. And I think that those are some of the hiccups that some communities may experience that make it difficult for them to break in to really being able to take their organization to the next level.
While you were growing up, who were some of your sheroes?
My mama. So they.
I know that's right.
So my mom was a vice president of a company called Eltrex Industries. And Eltrex Industries was a business that actually was created after the 1964 race riots in Rochester. And it was created initially as Fight On. And the company was a company in response to the fact that African Americans were not getting business and contracts with large corporate players like Kodak and Xerox. Mm-hmm. And so my mom ended up working there maybe 15 years after the organization was formed. But she built lots of different divisions within that organization. And she would bring us to work and I would see my mom looking as what we call now boss. And I remember she was running this stuff and she was, you know, in charge. And I just remember looking at her, and they used to call it a barracuda. They call me that now. And just feeling like, wow, I want to be like that one day. And my mom has always been able to help me. She was an entrepreneur. She was an intrapreneur. She's just always been able to assist me with wisdom and guidance. My father is a professor of entrepreneurship. My mom is a big-time risk taker. My dad is more of the practical, theoretical entrepreneur. But the two of them, I mean, there was no way that we couldn't, you know, I mean, the three girls, we're all entrepreneurs.
Why is it important for young people or individuals of your generation to take up the mantle, become leaders, become presidents and chairmen of these organizations that which we've established over the years?
Because if we don't do it, who else will? And you know, particularly at this time that we're in right now, everybody's looking for a leader. Well, my response is, you're the leader. Go be the leader. We're seeing in this country a situation where we have an epidemic, particularly with our young Black and Latino males. A young man that can't make it to college can't make it to the boardroom.
Okay.
And a young man that can't make it out of the prison industrial complex can't make it to the pathway to success. And so we're all responsible for this. This is a responsibility that everybody should bear. And I think it's important for the next generation to step up. And even when people tell you you're too young, you still show up anyways. I always like to say show up and show out. So that's why I think it's important.
I've read somewhere, and I think it has to do with an upcoming conference they're going to have, Texas Women Conference, where you say you're always the youngest person or the only African-American and something else as part of what you notice once you enter a particular room. But all that said and done, it gives you a certain level of confidence that you know you're there for the right reason at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my mind can shift to the insecurities of all of those things, right? I could be like, oh my goodness, I shrink. I'm the youngest person. I shrink more. I'm the only woman. I shrink more. I'm the only person of color. I'm the only African-American. I could either shrink or I could say, oh my goodness, I'm the youngest person in the room. Pats myself on the back. Oh my goodness, I'm the only woman in the room. Pats myself on the back. And next thing you know, I'm sitting taller and I'm feeling like I'm supposed to be here. Because if I wasn't supposed to be here, you know what? I wouldn't be here. And so my voice is just as important as everybody else's at the table. And it took me years to get there. So this certainly isn't something that happened overnight. But instead of me putting myself in a position where I had to climb up this, mm-hmm. I should always realize and should be realizing that I'm already there. and in many of these instances, and I should act accordingly instead of shrinking to the experience.
You founded a women in business organization. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so when I was living in D.C., I was 26. I started my first company, and this was before everybody was big on the entrepreneurial kick because, again, everybody was going to get jobs then. That was before the recession required us all to become entrepreneurs. But when I would go around and look for a female entrepreneur or a female mentor, they wouldn't respond. So nobody would respond to my request for lunch. Nobody would respond to my request for coffee. I wasn't important enough. I was just an email in the inbox. And so I said to myself, I have to self-mentor. So I started reading biographies of women that I wanted to be like. And obviously people like Alexis Herman and Madam C.J. Walker would come across my reading list all the time. And I decided to create a platform because women were also asking me to mentor them while I was looking for a mentor. So I said, let me create a platform where all of us could be mentored at the same time. And I called it Walker's Legacy. And the reason why we called it Walker's Legacy is because it's named in honor of Madam C.J. Walker. Because us walking into our destiny, us walking into our professional passion and purpose, us walking into our roles as women in business was really fulfilling her legacy. And from there, now we're in 7 states across the country.
How does one become involved with the organization?
With Walker's Legacy specifically, yes. You can go to our website, which is www.walkerslegacy.com. That's Walker's with an S. Or for the chamber, it's www.austinbcc.org.
How has the partnership that you all have forged with South by Southwest, with the, I guess that you all have a panel every year, the technology panel?
Yeah. So again, you know, recognizing that tech was king in Austin, we knew we needed to have a relationship with South By. So we actually honored Hugh Forrest, who's the director of South By Interactive, as our diversity partner of the year at last year's awards. We created with them the first ever African Diaspora Fellowship Program, where we bring Africans from the continent over to Austin, Texas, to participate in South By Southwest Interactive as a way for us to close the diaspora divide. And then we also do programming. We did at least 5 different panels, programs, workshops with our corporate partners like Facebook, Google at South by Southwest this year. And we hosted Africa House. So, you know, when you come to Austin for South by Southwest, you're going to feel the Black Technology Council if you're looking for some African-American things to do.
Natalie Madeira Cofield, President and CEO of the Greater Austin Black Chamber of Commerce, located in Austin, Texas. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at KUT.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.